The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
And folks, you're listening to The Good, the Bad, and the Boucherian.
The whole thing with like my bra growing up, my mom never gave me access to a bra. And that's another thing that I noticed, like a lot of people's parents, when they when they're abusing them, there's very different ways to be abused, like with, especially with women and like their daughters. What they'll do is like they'll see them as like competition, so see them as competition, like the other woman. And it's really sad because it's like then you're implying that your husband is looking at me in that way, and that's even more concerning. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, a lot of them, though, what they'll do is like not teach these girls how to handle like hygiene or just like basic like girl stuff. Like for me growing up, I never learned how to I never learned how to wear like a, or know what type of bra to wear, stuff like that. So my mom never gave me access to these things and never gave me access to really anything. All of the stuff that I own is probably like hand-me-downs from her. So, I remember I was young, my dad was super like weird about my boobs. He would always be like, oh my God, your boobs have to be perky for the man you're going to marry, which is funny because I just came out as a lesbian, which I think that's funny. He was like, your boobs aren't gonna be perky for the man you're gonna marry. And I thought it was weird because he's my father. Like, why are you looking at like the, why do you know the state of my breasts? You know what I'm saying? And it got to a point where he would start telling me I had to wear a bra at home all the time. And my mom, I told her, I thought it was weird that my dad was, you know, worried about what my boobs are doing. And she would say things like, you just have to like kind of curb his desires. You know, do your best to wear the bras around him because it could be exciting him in some way, some shit like that. And it was really disgusting because what do you mean by that? Like, why is my father looking at me in that way? Your father might be seeing you like that and getting excited, and so what you should do is wear a bra around him so I can curb his desires. It got to the point that like at home, my mom would be sitting there beside him and he would ask me to pull my shirt up to make sure that I was wearing a bra.
It's your boy Billy back at it with another episode. Hope you guys are keeping well, keeping safe amidst the pandemic, and things are going well on your side. Today is another Sunday, another week, another reason to express my gratitude for all the support this far with the podcast and for all the love you guys have shown the podcast. Thank you so much. And today in studio, we have Devon, and we'll be talking about deep stuff in this episode, so consider this your trigger warning, from parental abuse to parental neglect to other deeper stuff that you'll hear in the podcast, as well as talk a bit about autism, as our guest is autistic, so she'll tell us a bit about what that is like for her and even growing up in a toxic, abusive household, what that was all about, not forgetting to mention that the toxic household was propagated by Christian parents who are both pastors. So when I hear a bit about that dynamic as well, because a lot of times we try shun and not talk about these things, but these are things that are happening in real time, happening in 4K in our society. Well, tell us a bit about growing up in a Nigerian household. How was that like?
Okay, so I grew up in a Nigerian household that was very religiously tyrannical. They were never really supportive of anything I did because they saw it all as secular. All of the things that I did do, like when I drew, they didn't like the drawings because I'm a very like sci-fi type of person. I love to do science fiction and color and draw science fiction characters. A lot of the things that I did just in general in life, they weren't supportive of because they felt that it wasn't godly. Or whenever I would bring any of my talents to them, like when I would sing or, you know, whatever, whenever I would bring any of my talents to them, what they would do is end up saying, like, you should use that talent for church. And then they'd be like, if you can't use it for church, then you shouldn't use it. So a lot of things I got disconnected by, and a lot of it was just, like, me not having supportive people around. And then growing up in a Nigerian household was kind of a little bit different because it's, like, religious. My parents kind of distinguish themselves or, like, kind of, like, separate themselves from other, so to speak, Nigerians because they're, like, oh, we're the Nigerians that are, like, quote-unquote good. And that's why I kind of think that my parents are, like, kind of raised in a cult or, like, you know, they have this cult that they're in because they separate themselves. It's, like, us versus them. Nigerians, you know what I'm saying? So the difference really was just them being super strict, super, super strict. Really, the only thing that connected us was the foods, honestly. The only thing that connected us was the foods.
So I thought perhaps for you guys moving to America would make your parents more less conservative and more liberal, more open-minded to what's happening, how the world is changing.
Okay, so like when my parents, when they moved to America, like it was like my dad wouldn't, he didn't move here because he didn't move here for himself, if that makes any sense. He moved here because one of the pastors of his church in Nigeria was like, I think you should come here and pastor a church. So it was like you just, we just traveled from church to church to different locations. So the fact that it was in America, they just, I mean, my parents don't have lives outside of church. They don't. So it didn't really change any of their like traditional things. Another thing that they did was like they wanted to maintain that like the kind of strict religious like traditional nature that they had in Nigeria. They wanted to also like kind of bring that here, and they were like, we're different from the other people. We're Nigerians, we're Christians, we're different. You know what I'm saying? So it was very us, it was still very us versus them, if that makes any sense.
And for the other Nigerians, how do they feel about that? Do your parents, for example, put themselves on the on a pedestal that, you know, the holier than thou mentality?
Yes, my parents are gravely not self-aware. It's embarrassing how not self-aware they are. A lot of times when they like go on stage, they'll be preaching, and it's them preaching about themselves, literally preaching about like how bad this person is, and it's literally them, right? And it's so bad. But they do see themselves as holier than thou. They really do. They don't see themselves as people that can be questioned. They don't see themselves as people that can be wrong. They don't take responsibility for anything. They think that they're better than everybody. Like, they always take out any time they can to boast about themselves. Very self-centered people.
And so with that, do you think, before even asking you how that affected your relationship with your parents in the long run and even up to now, I think please can you take us a bit back into your childhood. So growing up, what are some of the things your parents probably did that up to date you still think are were very messed up?
So there was, okay, growing up, it was a lot. Like my parents growing up, let me just kind of frame my childhood for you so you can kind of understand what it was like. My mom had me in 2002. She had my second brother in 2005, and then my last one in 2010, right? So she had me in Nigeria. Then we moved here. Actually, we moved to Boston first. We were in Boston first. And then we moved down to like Georgia. So now that we're in Georgia, since then it was kind of just been, it's my parents never wanted to be actual parents. I feel like their whole thing was that they wanted to be parents for the like outside like pleasure, like for other people, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
It's like
for
for the
certain
sake of,
standards.
yeah, because I mean you feel like you get married, you have to have kids, right? So she had these, she wanted to have these kids just so she could have like bragging rights almost. That's kind of how my parents are. And so my dad was sick. He had like issues with like his kidneys, so he was always on dialysis, so he wouldn't be home at night, and then during the day he would be working, right? So he was almost never at home, rarely ever at home, and when he was sleeping. And then the youngest, like not the youngest, my mom, she would always just like work, 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 work. And then when she would come home, she was also sleeping. So it was really just like us by ourselves the entire time. The only time that they would come, the only time they would interact with us was to beat us, to yell at us, or to make like some type of like command, like go do this. You know what I'm saying? None of that. None of the parent stuff. None of that. It was always like, it was very like slave master slave, you know, interactions, how it was. I mean, a couple of things that my parents have done to me that really like messed me up. The whole thing with like my bra growing up, my mom never gave me access to a bra. And that's another thing that I noticed, like a lot of people's parents, when they when they're abusing them, there's very different ways to be abused. Like with, especially with women and like their daughters, what they'll do is like they'll see them as like competition. So see them as competition, like the other woman. And it's really sad because it's like then you're implying that your husband is looking at me in that way, and that's even more concerning. You know what I'm saying? But I mean, a lot of them, what they'll do is like not teach these girls how to handle like hygiene or just like basic like girl stuff. Like for me growing up, I never learned how to like Like, no, I never learned how to wear like a, or know what type of bra to wear, stuff like that. So my mom never gave me access to these things and never gave me access to really anything. All of the stuff that I own is probably like hand-me-downs from her. So, I remember I was young, my dad was super like weird about my boobs. He would always be like, "Oh my God, your boobs have to be perky for the man you're going to marry," which is funny because I just came out as a lesbian, which I think that's funny. He was like, "Your boobs aren't gonna be perky for the man you're gonna marry." And I thought it was weird because he's my father. Like, why are you looking at like the, why do you know the state of my breasts? You know what I'm saying? And it got to a point where he would start telling me I had to wear a bra at home all the time. And my mom, I told her, it was, I thought it was weird that my dad was, you know, worried about what my boobs are doing. And she would say things like, you just have to like kind of curb his desires. You know, do your best to wear the bras around him because it could be exciting him in some way, some shit like that. And it was really disgusting because what do you mean by that? Like, why is my father looking at me in that way?
Yeah, wait. Are you serious that your mother actually told you that?
I swear to God, she did, yes. She said, maybe you could just do that to curb his desires. She's like, well, I mean, your father might be seeing you like that and getting excited, and so what you should do is wear a bra around him so I can curb his desires. It got to the point that, like, at home, my mom would be sitting there beside him, and he would ask me to pull my shirt up to make sure that I was wearing a bra.
So you'd be standing and he'd tell you, pull your shirt up. And this is in your early teenagehood.
Yeah, it was like I was around maybe I'll say I was in late, no, I'll say early high school, late middle school, something like that, those times.
And your dad is a
It's,
pastor.
yes.
Carry on.
Both of them are pastors, which is unbelievable. But I mean, they're very people. They're just a couple of things. There was this time when my mom just totally she booked a flight to Europe. She says it was me and her that was supposed to go on the trip, right? She says that, right? So what she said is like, "I'll pack your bags, and then you don't have to ride the bus. I'll come pick you up early from school because the bus takes too long to get you to my neighborhood, right?" So she goes, so what I do is I school finishes, I miss the bus, right? So then I'm sitting in the front of the school waiting for her to come pick me up. She never does. She went straight for the trip, and I think she had my ticket. I don't know what she did with my ticket. I don't even know if she booked my ticket to this day. I don't know. But what I knew is that she did. She left me at the school, and she had to call somebody that was living like 4 hours away to drive and come get me. And I stayed at their house. She just forgot me, just left me there. Those are just a couple of things that my parents have done that kind of just like is impossible for me to like forgive them for. And I don't see forgiveness anywhere on the horizon. It's not even on my list. Really, I'm excited for court. Open up a case and then I'll see them in court, you know?
Yeah, so it's for you, it's that because I've seen a lot of times on social media people saying, forgive your parents, as if it's something very easy. People will tell you, forgive your parents, they didn't know what they were doing, you know, such comments. So for you, how do you take such comments?
I think it's bullshit. Yeah, I think it's bullshit. I think people that want you to forgive your parents have not been. I think people do underestimate what these people are capable of, just how evil people can be. They think that they think that all parents inherently love their kids, but they don't. They don't love their kids. There are a lot of parents who have kids who they end up despising their kids because people tell you when you have kids, oh, your kids are gonna, you know, it's so fulfilling and you're gonna be so happy and kids are so this and that, and they only see like from the outside when you guys meet up with other people's kids. You know what I'm saying? They only see it from the outside. So when they add kids of their own, it was definitely like my mom, I could tell you this right now, my mom probably hates the fact that we took away her individual life from her. I see that in the way that she acts, even to this day. Like she'll do anything to leave us somewhere and just run off. Like she doesn't have kids. She'll do anything for that. Especially if it involves my dad, right? So she'll do anything to just like run off with my dad. Anything. Anything. Literally. And I have to oftentimes be the parent. I have to be like, yo, if you're about to go to the house, like I remember this is one trip recently. I'll tell you that story later, but let me finish what I was saying about this. A lot of people want you to forgive your parents. And I think you don't have to. Fuck them. Because we wouldn't have this we don't hold our parents to the same standards as we hold other people. if you ask yourself, like, if your boyfriend or if your girlfriend or if your like partner or even like a just a good friend did some shit like that to you, like your parents do to you, would you be okay with that? No, you wouldn't keep that person in your life. People always want you to keep your parents in your life, and that's not realistic. It's not. It's hurting you more than it's helping you, because parents like that, all they do is essentially have kids for like retirement plans. They don't have kids because they want kids. They have kids because they want someone to take care of them when they're old. A lot of people do that. And it's really frustrating. It's really frustrating when people tell me, oh, I should forgive my parents, or, you know, they just, it's just a communication error, or it's just, you know, they were raised at different times, all those excuses. When you have kids, like for me, like this is one thing I've always like, I've never understood. When you have kids, I couldn't imagine doing, not doing research before I had kids. I couldn't imagine reading books. I couldn't imagine like learning how to be the best parent I probably can. I couldn't imagine doing research. I couldn't imagine not preparing myself adequately before having kids. I couldn't imagine going to ther not going to therapy. I couldn't imagine doing all of the necessary things to do before I had kids. I couldn't imagine not doing that. So it really is like we're not holding them accountable enough. We're just not. I feel like people aren't doing that. People want to just be like, okay, it happened forever ago. It's different times. We should forgive them. No, we should not. So yes, I am taking them to court.
You plan to take them to court and sue them for all they've done to you.
Yes, I do.
Think again, when I saw your video, you talked about how a lot of Nigerians relate to your video. Like they had similar experiences. And so is it something that our culture, probably even as Africans, we propagate, or is it that, like, what do you think might be the cause of that? And again, for you at this point, now that your parents have done all this to you, when they do more hurtful things to you, are you detached to the point where it doesn't matter anymore whatever they do, or does it still hurt you even more?
First one was about the culture, right? So the culture, naturally, like Nigerian cultures, they often have this power dynamic. It's always a power dynamic between, just in general, like a power dynamic. I feel like a lot of people have parents that there's like this weird power dynamic. Like when you greet your elders, you have to get on your knees, stuff like that. It's a power dynamic that is in the culture, and inherently it's not wrong because it's just culture, right? But people can very definitely abuse that culture. They can definitely abuse that power because the power dynamic is cool, right? There's nothing wrong with having okay, the culture is also very like misogynistic, very like men should be the head of the house, women should be like the submit. You know what I'm saying? Very, very misogynistic. So, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. If you're a good man and you're a good woman and you choose to, you know, like if you're good people and you choose to have that dynamic in your relationship, then that's your business, right? But it obviously can always be abused. Any type of power dynamic can be abused, especially if there's like a gigantic power difference. If it's a small power difference, right? If it's a small power difference, even then it can be abused. So imagine a culture that really makes it a big thing to have those huge power difference. The whole am I your mate? You know what I'm saying? They don't see them. They don't see themselves as equals to children. And that really does cause a lot of issues because parents really do see themselves like on this pedestal and ch see children as less than humans. And it's frustrating. It's really frustrating because it does indeed propagate that. So when I see a lot of African kids or like Nigerian kids going like, hey, I agree, like my parents do this too. That's exactly how it is for me too. It's frustrating because I know why. I know why. I know it's because of the cultures. I know how like misogynistic the culture can be, like when abused. I see how misogynistic it is. I see how abusive the power dynamics are. And then when you add in the fact that like you add in the church, the African church, I'm sorry, it's full of people who are on a power high. It is. It's full of people on a power high because I feel like a lot of people, I feel like just in general, the church plays on people's issues. Because imagine you have that huge power dynamic in your day-to-day life with your family, like your family, your parents. They have this huge power dynamic. The whole like I'm the parent, you're the child, so you're less than me type of power dynamic, right? So they have that power dynamic, and then you leave your parents, and you search for that again. You do. You search for that again. You search for that unhealthy power difference. And then you find the church, and that's where you find it. The only thing is that they can't hit you at church. That's the only difference. So, it's propagated a lot in the culture. It's propagated a lot in religion. It's propagated a lot. Like, it's a huge issue. And then what was your second question?
On the detachment, does it still hurt you when they do bad things, or are you beyond that?
I mean, I'm human, right? So I have human emotions. But because I understand why a lot of my things is like, especially being as someone who's autistic, for me, it only hurts me when it makes no sense. It only hurts me when it makes no sense, right? It still hurts me sometimes, but it would hurt me more if I didn't understand why they did the things that they do. I'm not condoning it, you know what I'm saying? But I understand why they do it. For me, like if I the more I understand about like why they're doing what they're doing, it really doesn't bother me. Like it really is just like I equate my parents, in terms of like how I see them, I equate them to people who are more like children. Like, when a child is doing like their childish things or like they're arguing or like they're yelling at you, you're just kind of like laughing it off, like haha, you're just a kid, That's kind of how I deal with it. I'm very detached to it in that way. Like my mom will start to mom she loves to do this thing where she'll do anything to like start an argument with me or start, say something to just to get a reaction out of me. She'll do stuff just to get reactions out of me. She said it herself, like I just did it to see if you were gonna react. She'll just do things to get reactions out of me, and I stopped giving her those reactions, and then she stopped interacting with me as a whole. Like we don't talk unless we absolutely have to. And then my dad, we stopped interacting too because it's like every time I talk to him, it's like it's always an issue. I feel like a lot of parents, especially in Nigerian culture, like Nigerian parents do not know what it's like to be kids. They do not know because their parents don't let them be kids. Since they were kids, it's like you have to cook and clean and do all this like adult stuff. It's like a lot of Nigerian parents, they'll have their I'm assuming, the unhealthy Nigerian parent dynamics. Of course, I'm sure there are healthy African households. You know what I'm saying? There's healthy Nigerian households. But what I'm saying is like a lot of it, like people have kids and then they're like, well, you're like 3, 4, 5, I don't know, you're old enough to do this stuff, do it. And then they just drop their responsibilities on their kids. And they're like, how can I have kids? And I have to cook for myself. You should be able to cook at this age. And this, the daughter ends up being the mom, taking care of all the kids. They don't end up being kids. They don't. They don't end up just being kids, carefree and exploring themselves and learning about themselves. They don't do it. They end up having to take on adult responsibilities because their adult parents didn't want to anymore. So they don't know what it's like to be kids. And so what it ends up being is just emotionally immature people that are emotionally children, then having kids, and then their children having to essentially babysit them for their entire childhood. So that's what it is for me. Like my parents, they're just emotionally children. Emotionally children. A lot of parents are just not even Nigerian, just Nigerian parents, but just parents are. A lot of parents are like emotionally children, emotionally immature.
So for you, now that your brothers were younger than you, do you feel like you missed a part of your childhood now that you talk of any chance your mom gets to leave you guys, she does it. So obviously, if she does that, then you're the one who has to take up the motherhood roles for your brothers and stuff. So do you feel like at some point you missed a lot of your childhood having to do all these adult duties before you are ready to do them?
Yes, I did. I didn't realize until I turned 18 and realized that I didn't know anything about myself. I didn't know anything about myself. Like, I didn't know my favorite color. I didn't know if I had a preferred song. Like, I don't know what genre of song I prefer to listen to. I don't know. I didn't know anything about myself. I had no hobbies. I had no likes, no dislikes. It was nothing. I had nothing. Like, it was just me and my name. That's the only thing I could tag myself. That was the only thing. It was like me, I'm Nigerian, 19 or 18 at that time, and I'm black. That's literally all I knew. All I knew. And I lost a lot of I didn't have time for me. I picked up the parenting role so my brothers could have childhoods. So for them, I mean they have their likes and dislikes. They love games. They love YouTube. Like they had their childhood, but I sacrificed mine to take care of them. My mom didn't want to do the job, so I did it. She didn't want to do it, so I did it. And I ended up not knowing anything about myself, anything. I didn't get time to have to be a child and have, find those likes and dislikes. And especially because at that time that I was literally a child, the only time that I had to be a child when there was no siblings until up until like maybe 2005, I was under a strict religious household who was like, anytime for me, I'm a sci-fi person. I know that now. I'm a sci-fi person. I love sci-fi. I love like fiction. I love mythical creatures, things that like the church is very anti, like, oh my God, that's so demonic, da da da, you know? So they see these things as like demonic. And a lot of the things that I was drawn to, they just ripped it apart, ripped it away from me because they're like, oh, we want you to be only into like church stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I really did not end up having a childhood. I ended up, so now what I'm trying to do is like regain that, like give myself that life where I get to be a child for some time. Of course, I still have adult responsibilities. And it was kind of sucky because when I was thinking about it, I turned 18. I was like, yeah, I'm into the real world now. I have to go work. I never got time to be a child. I realize that now. I never had time to be a child. So it feels unfair. It feels like I didn't get to be a child and now I have to join the working world.
Mm-hmm.
So, stressful. But yeah. And yeah.
Because that's crazy now that you don't know, like now you can't be the child you want to be and explore mm-hmm. those things, but yeah. you still have to heal your inner child. Yeah. But then in the process, having to adult now that you're now 18 and want to perhaps even move out and start your own life. So you have mm-hmm. to put in the work and all of that. But another thing is you talked about your parents beating you naked in front of your younger siblings. So two mm-hmm. questions. One, how do you think that affected your brothers actually seeing you being beaten naked in front of them? Mm-hmm. And for you, did that ever affect how you felt, like your self-esteem and all of that? How did that affect your social life?
I never wanted to bring people home for those reasons. I never wanted to bring people home. Never. Like, to this day, none of my friends have been, let me not say friends, I don't really have any friends for real. But like none of the people that I ever befriended growing up came to my house. None of them. Nobody ever came to my house. I never invited people over. Only time I invited people over was people that were already going to come because it's church involved. Like, I never invited people over. In terms of self-esteem, it messed with me sexually. Like, I'm asexual. But because of that, because I never learned how to have, like, boundaries, like, it was never like I was allowed to have boundaries growing up in terms of, like, my body. I felt like I owed people my body, if that makes any sense. Like, I've never had sex before, mm-hmm. but I constantly felt like I had to do these things for people until I realized that, like, I can say no. I didn't realize that I could. And I didn't realize until I started, like, kind of standing on my word, even at home. Like, my parents don't like it now, but, like, I will say no. And they were like, what do you mean by no? I'm your mom. What do you mean by no? I was like, no, I really don't want to. And then I walk away. Because I learned that I can say no. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But that's how it messed with me. In terms of my brothers, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't asked them. I feel like that's something I don't want to open up for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have no idea. And I don't want to think about it. It's something we're going to have to address at some point. Mm-hmm. Definitely. But I don't know. I really do not know. Actually, no, let me say this. I mentioned to my little brothers if they remember it. And they were like, yes, they remember it. I don't know how it impacted them, though. But they do remember it happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked them, I was like, do you remember that happening to you too? Or was it just me? And he was like, well, my dad made me strip naked. And then he made my brothers just pull their pants down.
Huh?
So, yeah. Well, actually, wait. No, I don't.
Uh-huh.
They did. Yeah. So the middle one, they hit them. But then like the younger one, they didn't hit him as much. They didn't make him do that when he was younger. It was just me and my middle one. The middle one, they made him pull it shut. My dad made him pull his pants down. Just like, you know, expose the butt. And then for me, I had to strip naked.
And your mom knew all this all along?
Yes. Yes.
And what was she saying when all this was happening? Because I can imagine how wild that is. Mm-hmm.
My mom has raging, for sake of simplification, daddy issues. And honestly, my mom is very, like, messed up in the head in the way that she walked in on something like that. Because he would only do it when she wasn't home. But if she walked in on something like that, she'd probably just be mad that, like, I was exposing myself to my dad as if it was my choice. She would probably be mad. She'd be like, she would be mad and, like, a jealous, like, why are you showing my husband your body? Like, it's my husband type of way. That would be what she would do.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't ever be, like, you know, something like, oh, my God, that's wrong. Like, I don't want you doing that. But all the same, he wouldn't do that unless my mom wasn't home. So
now with that, What do you think might be some of the issues that propagate the mother and daughter competition that you talked about, where your mother feels as if you're competing for her husband, but really for you, that's your father. There's no way. That's actually even disgusting to think about. So what do you think is some why what do you think is the thought process that goes on through her mind when she thinks that you should wear a bra because your dad might feel this way, or you're taking away my husband, or whatnot?
So for my mom, like her dad died at a young age and she didn't get a father figure. I think she sees my dad as more of like a father figure, because it literally feels like without my dad, like when my dad goes for like trips or something, my mom totally forgets how to behave. Totally free. This also goes into like the whole idea that I feel like my mom might have like a lot of mental illnesses, because in the way that she acts, it's not sensible. It's not sensible. The way she acts, it's not sensible. It just can't be. You can't be sane acting like this. You know what I'm saying? So it's not sensible. She lost her dad at a young age. So I think she sees my dad as like more of a father and kind of like surrounds herself, her entire self around this man. She doesn't work. She just stays at home. She doesn't work. She just stays at home all the time. And he goes out for work and he comes back and he handles most of the stuff that happens at home. She just kind of exists at home. She's more like a roommate, you know? She doesn't, they don't even sleep in the same, really, like she doesn't even, they don't even sleep in the same room type of thing. They're like, it's like roommates, right? But then anytime I try to have any type of like bond with my father, like I remember one time my dad paid my phone bill and she was like, "What's that about? You've never paid my phone bill." And it was like, "What? What?
Bro.
Like, what is going on right now?" Like, literally, my dad will be in the house. Like, every time I notice this, every time my dad has an issue that he's not in the house for some reason, here comes my mom and her issues. Like, literally, my dad. I remember my dad went to the hospital for some time. My mom gathered all of us around and was like, "He's never given me money. You know, he's in the hospital now and he wants me to go visit him, but he's never given me money to go out and just have fun." Da 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 da. She does not. Just the most illogical conclusions come from her. So I think she sees my dad as more like a father figure that she also has sex with. It's gross. It's gross. But like a father figure, like a man that she just looks up to. It's really embarrassing in the way that she literally just does not even think that she has her own decisions, that she can make her own decisions. Only time she'll make her own decisions is when I literally had to like mess with, I had to get in her head about like letting me work again, and it didn't work. But it ended up not working for the best, because then it drove me to TikTok. It drove me to like content creating, and I found something I enjoy doing that I can do without like a rigid schedule. I hate schedules. So when I was trying to like get in her head about this work thing, I was like, "You have way more strength that you're giving yourself. You know, tell him that you want me to work again." And she tried to try to put her foot down, but she can't make her own decisions without my father. And so when my father's not around, she just loses herself. She has no idea, and it's so weird. Like, how are you losing your sense of self because your man isn't around? Like, that's so weird. But that goes into me just thinking that, like, you know, but how it in fact impacted our relationship, we don't have one. We don't
At
have one.
all.
None. We don't talk. We barely talk. All the time it's like, "Go clean this." Okay. We don't talk.
So to give the listeners a bit
Okay,
of
okay. For
perspective about how your relationship is with your mom.
okay, so my mom, we were going to like, honestly, she never takes us anywhere unless she had something to do first. Like, so well, she took me to the mall that day, not because she wanted to take me to the mall, but because she wanted to buy a new iPad for herself, or like to fix her iPad, something like that. So across the store, like across the kind of, and I would say street, but it's like across the mall, right? Just across the store across from the Apple store was Forever 21. So we went in there. We had this like moment where I was like, I thought we were bonding, but apparently it wasn't, you know. We go there, we try on these bras, we get fitted, we get like this idea of like the size, like our sizes, you know what I'm saying? We're like, "Okay, this is so exciting." We find these bras that work, you know, and then we get in line. And so on the screen is are these models, and I've always said I wanted to model. I've been told since I was young that I should model, and so it's cool that I'm gonna step into that soon. But I was told
You
since I was
are.
young that I
That's
should
good for
I
you.
Yes, I am. I am. I'm so excited. I got my first offer recently. A lady was like, "I want you to model for my clothing line and I'll pay you." And I was like, "Oh, nice." So I'm gonna do
Hey,
that.
get it.
I know. Thank you. But like we were in this line, and I've been looking up to these models. I was like, this model did this, and this model did this, and they're so cool. And I was just talking to her about these models. And then we get to the cashier, and the cashier rings all of this stuff up. And then my mom sees the price, and she goes, "You're not really worth the investment. Like, you're not worth the investment. Take her stuff off." And I thought it was like a money thing at first. When it first happened, it was such a shock, and I was so emotional. But I was just in shock, and at first I thought it was a money thing. I thought it was money, right?
Yeah.
And then it happened a second time at a different situation, right? I'll tell you that situation in a second, but I thought it was a money thing. And so what I did in that situation was like, oh, that's fine. You know, we really can't afford that anyways, you know? So just go ahead, you know, take mine off. You know, you could, but if, as a mother, why would you buy stuff for yourself and not for your daughter? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So it's definitely really weird. Like, it would make more sense to buy the daughter stuff. And because, I mean, you're a woman, you have your established bras, they work for you. I've never had an established bra. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
yeah.
Why would you not do that? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Second time it happened was we went to this boutique for her birthday. She wanted to buy a dress for her birthday, and she brought me along. And she was like, "Hey, I want you to pick a dress, and I'll pick a dress, and then we'll meet in the thing." So we meet in the dressing room, and we try on these dresses, and I'm like, "Oh my God, this is so cute!" You know what I'm saying? And so she buys this $600 dress, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then she sees the dress that I want. She sees the price cheaper than hers. She goes, "No, no, no, we'll go to Ross for your dress." And so she makes me put away these dresses that I tried on, and she buys a dress for herself. So I thought it was money, but it wasn't money. She just didn't care enough. I ended up wearing a scratchy sequin dress that was like way too short, and I had to wear like leggings under the dress. So it was like a horrible outfit, and I cried the entire party because I'm autistic. I don't like the textures of sequin. It scratches my skin. I felt uncomfortable. I cried the entire time. And then I got yelled at when I couldn't come up with, because one thing, you know, imagine being treated like that at home, and then like because your parents are pastors, they see them as like these like cool, like really loving and like patient people, and then they're shitty people at home, and then you go to a birthday party, and then you hear these people talking about your parents, the same parents you have, and they're sitting there like, "Pastor is so loving and kind and peaceful. He's never raised his voice. He doesn't raise his voice. He's so loving," and all these like praise stories about how great my parents are. And so then they expect that like the kids can do that too. So we'll go up on there and they'll be like, "Here, we want you to talk about your parents." And it's like, it's kind of like, there's nothing to say. Like, they're pieces of shit. That would be the only thing I would be able to say. And so I hate lying. Mm-hmm. I hate lying. I don't like to lie, but I had to go up there and lie, and it physically pained me to lie. And so I would sit there and start crying. And people thought it was because I was getting emotional, because I was talking about how great my parents were, that I was getting emotional, right? But I was just in there bawling because I'm lying. Like, no, they're not good people. They're pieces of shit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it fucked with our relationship just in general. Like, we don't have one. We don't talk. Only time we talk is when we argue or she's trying to tell me to do something. That's the only time we talk. We don't talk.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. We don't talk. No relationship.
And so for you, what does it do to you when you hear everyone else in the church probably saying how great these people are, but you're the one who knows the real them, you know? Everyone knows the mm-hmm. facade that they paint in church. You know, in church, mm-hmm. everyone is the kind person, everyone is loving, they'll say hi, put on a smile. But when you go mm-hmm. home, it's a whole different ball game. You see, now they are all, the makeup is off, the facade is off, the mask is off, mm-hmm. and you'll see mm-hmm. the real thing. So for you, what does it do to you when you hear people offering these praises, but deep down, you know, this person beat me so bad last night, I can't believe you guys are actually mm-hmm. even saying this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, it's always a crazy ass feeling, but it's always like, I can't hide my expressions. I'll sit there like, what are you talking about? Are you fucking, like, I'll sit there with like such an expression on my face that's like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Doesn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? Me and my brothers, whenever we would sit at these parties, we would just look at each other, make eye contact, like, what are they talking about? Like,
yeah.
What are they talking about? That's not real. That's not true. Like, how are you seeing these cool people? And this is saying people that are like horrible people to us. Like, how is that happening for you?
Mm-hmm.
It's always been very, very crazy. Like the distinction. And then it's like, especially when it came to the fact that they're pastors, right? So we'll see them get on these stages and be like holier than thou, and we're pastors and we're leading these people and we're so holy and anointed, and then they're horrible people. And it makes it, it made it impossible for me to think Christianity was serious. Like, you can't be serious. Christianity can't be as serious as, it can't be real. If, with the way that people are acting, it can't be real. It made me question my beliefs early. Like, I was like 8, going, Christianity doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense, because if you're a Christian and you're in, in constant communication, you see my parents are always speaking in tongues, like, you're in constant communication with this, like, this person that's supposed to be like this deity that's supposed to be like good and loving and kind and patient, you know what I'm saying? And he's supposed to make you better when you communicate with, how come you haven't characteristically matured? Like, where is the rub off of that? Like, where does it, I don't understand. It's another reason that I kind of feel like this church is a cult, because it's like the only time that they would the only, like, I guess, type of advancement, so to speak, that they would make would be like more dedication to the church. It wouldn't change how they interacted with people. It wouldn't change how they themselves behave. It wouldn't change any of their, like, personality or their characteristics in terms of, like, themselves and their, like, personality. They wouldn't change any of that. But you know what it would change? Their dedication, and how dedicated and absolutely sold out to this cause that the church has. That's the only time that it would, that's the only thing it would change. And it was just like, it's so crazy. Like, are you shitting me? You talk to the Holy Ghost all the time and you're still a piece of shit. Like, how do you do these things? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's very counterintuitive in that as Christianity, you're preaching love, you're preaching be kind. And there's nothing, my parents always tell me, there's nothing about being kind when you're kind to everyone else, but at home, you're not kind to your. The people at home, you know, like that is all a lie. Those are things you do for the show that everyone else would call you to inflate your ego, to massage your narcissistic behaviors. But if at home the people in the house don't feel that love, don't feel that warmth, that kindness that everyone else purports to see, then really there's nothing about it. And that's why for me, even when people do that, you just think about this is fake Christianity, if anything. Like, you can't be on the podium preaching to people to do this, but your own family, you know, then feel the same way. And I think you should tell us a bit about even diving into mental health, because I know for sure that affected your mental health a lot. Please tell us about autism, a bit about autism. For the listeners, for example, tell us what is it to have autism? What is it like to have autism? What is autism in itself? And what are some of the ways, you know, your parents probably made it, quote unquote, worse, or didn't help you get aware of it and navigate through it as you probably would have.
Okay, so growing up, I've never understood social interaction. Since I was young, I remember being the castaway in social interaction, but not castaway in terms of, like, nobody liked me. It's because I just didn't get it. I always felt disconnected from everything. I like, when I was young, people didn't really like me because I was very hyperverbal. That's another sign that I was very hyperverbal, and I would only talk about things that I wanted to talk about. I couldn't maintain conversation about things that I didn't care about, and so I would rant and rant and rant and rant and rant about this whatever I cared about. But when people want to talk about other things, it's just like, I can't talk to, I cannot, I can't do that. So I was always very hyperverbal growing up, and because of that, like, when you're hyperverbal, especially, in an abusive household, like, it's like, you don't want to remind them that you exist. You don't want to remind your parents that you exist. And so what you do is you end up, like, learning how to, find hobbies that take away that, like, that pass time, and that also keep you away and hidden from, like, the people. So, like, you don't want to be around them to do these things. Like, you don't want to remind them that you exist, because if you remind them that you exist, now they're angry at you, now they're hitting you. So for survival, I had to learn how to, like, just kind of be on my own, and it messed me up really a lot growing up, because I didn't know what was wrong, so to speak, with me. Because there's nothing wrong with having autism, right? Because autism is just like, your brain works in a different way. You process things differently. You can't expect every brain. There's like 7 billion people in this world, and then people have died, you know? There's so many people, and every brain can, you can expect it to work the same. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of just how I see it. Like, for me, personally, growing up, I was always very, very, very weird about textures, the foods I ate. I only ate certain foods, and autism runs in families. So my brothers, they also show signs, and my mom also shows signs of autism too. So it runs in families. And especially when you're in a house full of people that are undiagnosed, a house full of people whose culture does not even acknowledge autism. It doesn't even acknowledge it. You know what I'm saying? Like Nigerians, Africans, they don't acknowledge it. Or if they do, it'll be like, oh, it's demons. It's demonic, the spirit of autism. You know, things like that. So like, I didn't learn about that growing up. I didn't know about that growing up. So I grew up completely unaware of what it was that made me feel like I could never fit into any social situation. I had no idea, you know, how to have conversation with people. When I did have conversation with people, it seemed like I was dominating the conversation because it was like, I can only talk about things I care about, or I stay completely silent and listen to you talk about things you care about. The back and forth in conversation, I had to like literally train myself how to do. Growing up, I would watch like TV shows and I would study the way that they talk, or I'll read books and I'll study the way that they talk. And so when I'm talking oftentimes on TikTok a lot, people will say that like they really like the way that I put my thoughts together. But that's because I put it together like I'm writing a book, but out loud. You know what I'm saying? I learned how to socialize with people through books and shows. That's how I learned how to do it. So when I was young, I didn't have any idea when to stop talking. I didn't know, because I feel like people kind of know like when to stop talking about whatever they're talking. I didn't know when. I didn't have that innate ability to understand when to stop talking and when to keep talking, things of that sort. Didn't have that. It annoyed my parents because I would talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. Another thing is like also stimming. A stim is like, autistic people, they do self-stimulatory behavior to either soothe themselves or like express an emotion that they're expressing, like the feeling. So like growing up, I see this with my little brothers. One of my little brothers, he's a very, 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 very like movie kid. Like he does a lot of squirming. He moves around a lot. He doesn't sit still, right? I was like that growing up too. But when your parents are people that want to control you, your parents don't like when you bounce your leg and then your parents go, stop bouncing your leg. Like just sit still, you know, you just sit still. Stuff like that. Like, you eventually start to learn how to mask, and masking comes to detriment, like to the detriment of your mental health, your emotional health. It comes to the detriment of your health just in general. It messes with you because masking is pretending to be neurotypical when you're neurodivergent. Like it's pretending.
Yeah.
Like when my parents are pretending to be these normal people, they're masking. It drains the energy out of you to pretend to not be that person that you are. And I didn't know that that was what I was doing, because mind you, you're not equipped with this vocabulary about like autism, masking, you know, you're not equipped with that vocabulary. And so it's just like your experiences. So growing up, I remember, you know, my parents were very strict about how much time I spent doing anything. Like I wasn't allowed to move too much. When I was younger, one of my things was that I didn't like my feet touching the ground. I wore socks all the time. My dad hated it. My dad wanted me to be barefoot in the house all the time. And I didn't want it because I didn't know I had autism, but I didn't like it because I just did not like it. Like, I didn't like the way that it felt. Like, it feels to be barefoot in the house. I didn't like that. And I ended up having to oftentimes, like, sacrifice a lot of my comfort for the sake of like other people that were trying to control my like state of being. I ended up having to mask a lot. I had to mask a lot to make other people comfortable, to also keep myself safe. I had to mask a lot. I totally forgot what it was like to be myself. I totally forgot what it was like to be myself. And it caused me to have this constant, like almost like a void and like a black hole within me. In a black hole, like within my thoughts, that was like, I have no idea. Once again, along with the fact that like I had to raise my siblings, I had no idea who I was. I didn't even know what my actual voice sounded like, because since I was young, I had been like masking. And so this voice that I had been using wasn't mine. It was not my voice. Didn't know what my voice sounded like. I didn't know what I liked. I didn't I could not fit into society. I couldn't do it when I was working, and I had a lot of trouble with just basic things at work, and I thought I was just like an idiot. But then I would do well in school, and so it was like I was book smart, but like in terms of like real life things, it was like I just seemed to miss so much. Like I don't understand vague instructions. Like if someone was to like vaguely be like, I want you to like do this, or someone was to hand me like a pen and paper, right? This is one of the examples I use a lot. Pen and paper. Someone hands you a card and a pen. For me, you know, for a neurotypical person, what they would assume is that they are supposed to like sign the card, right? This is something that happened in church a lot. Like whenever we would sign cards, you assume that you're supposed to sign the card because you're neurotypical and you can just assume, but we don't assume. I don't assume, you know what I'm saying? So I'll just sit there with a card and pen in hand, just thinking that you wanted me to hold it for you, because that's all that I can deduce from what you've given to me. Like you want me to hold this for you. So I don't know how to understand vague directions. I need someone to explain it to me in detail. And people, a lot of people that are neurotypical, they don't question why. So when I was young, I always questioned why, because I feel like a lot of people growing up, like not growing up, but just people in general, they just do things. They don't question why. They just do. A lot of people just do it. A lot of people don't question why. So growing up, I questioned why a lot, and that pissed my parents off because how dare you question me? You know what I'm saying? That's what my parents were like, they're like, how dare you question me? I'm the parent. I said, because I said so. And because I said so doesn't work for autistic kids. It does not work. It doesn't work. Because I said so, it does not work. It does not work. So what it ends up doing is just me constantly like pissing off my parents because I want to understand like why. I have no problem following rules. I love rules. They're cool. Like I love rules. I have no problem following them if I understand why they're put in place. And they never gave me reasons as to why I couldn't bounce my leg or reasons as to why I couldn't do this and that. And it just felt like I ended up just losing and becoming a shell of myself. My mental health was horrible. Like I used to, I would be suicidal for 2 weeks a month before my period. Then during my period, I would feel awful and just cry all the time. And then I had 2 weeks where I was like, I'm not gonna do that anymore. I'm determined to, you know, be happy this like forever. I want to be happy, right? And then 2 weeks would go by and I'm like, okay, this is cool. This is cool. And then boom, again, depression. Because that's also like it, when it comes to like autistic burnout, I would go out and then mask all day and I didn't even know what masking was. And so the world just in general took up a lot of energy, took up a lot of energy. And so I would come home and just want to be silent. And that doesn't work at an abusive home. You don't get to just be silent. You come home and you get bullshit. You know what I'm saying? So that's how it messed with me growing up. Like I just in general being autistic. And then like my parents, like they don't understand what autism is. They don't I mentioned therapy to my parents a couple months ago, and my parents totally blew up about it. They're like, we don't have any problems. We don't have any problems. And I was like, no, you really should consider it, because I'm starting to see more and more signs. As I do like more research about autism, I start to see more and more signs in my family. And this is what happens a lot, like with families that have autism, nobody knows because everybody functions weird. You know what I'm saying? Everybody functions weird. So, but yeah, that's kind of how it messed with me growing up. I wish I would have had access to these things, like this knowledge earlier. It would have changed a lot for me. I would have not had that gaping hole where myself should be. But I started getting more and more into the idea of unmasking in my room, and I really do prefer my unmasked self. Along with like the use of marijuana, like marijuana just in general, like it makes it impossible for me to mask on marijuana. Impossible. Same thing with shrooms. It makes it impossible for me to mask. Impossible. Like I can't do it. And I think I really enjoy it because I just get to be myself, you know. So
But
that's
even
kind
with
of.
that, how did you get to know you are autistic? Why did you go to hospital and get diagnosed? Or
Okay,
what?
so.
And
Okay, so in terms of like the diagnostic criteria and in terms of like for autism, a lot of it surrounds around your ability to function in a capitalist society. And a lot of it does, because in order for someone to flag you for autism, you would have to be some sort of like distraction or any. It basically is really just, it chalks up to how much of a distraction or like, so to speak, nuisance, so to speak, you are like around people. Like, how much does your behavior impact the behavior of people around you? It's oftentimes centered around like how much of a, I guess, burden, so to speak, you are around other people. That's what it is. Like, how much does your behavior impact other people? And then also, and also, like, how much does your behavior impact your ability to function in a society like ours? So it's like the diagnostic criteria for autism also was only studied for boys, white men, like white boys. And a lot of autism has to do with social, your inability to function in social situations. And white America has absolutely no idea what it's like to be Nigerian and not fit in at a Nigerian event. White America has no idea what it's like to be black and not fit in at a black event or a black like social setting. They don't know because they don't understand black social settings. They're white. And then when it comes to like women or people that are assigned female at birth, women, they oftentimes mask a lot better. They mask. The thing with boys and why boys are oftentimes caught early is because boys can't mask. So like this is one thing like that I say in terms of like the diagnostic criteria. Black people of color, indigenous Americans in general should be, and also just people in general, like not even just white people, not even just black people of color, but just people in general. No, they don't know anything about autism. It's a spectrum and it shows up differently in so many different people. It shows up so differently in people. It's not a monolith. And people don't know. Some people go 40 something years without ever knowing that they're autistic, ever knowing. They go 40 something years, 50 something years without ever knowing. And some people have died not knowing that they were autistic. Because there's no research on it, and there's no research on what it's like to be autistic in a woman, let alone a black woman, let alone a Nigerian black woman. You know what I'm saying? So there's no research. So I feel like people should be able to self-diagnose. When I first started figuring out, like, in terms of like for me, how did I go about like my diagnosis? What I did was I started trying to figure out what was wrong with me. I realized that those 2 weeks of depression was not normal. It was not normal. It was not normal. So I started looking at like I was trying to figure out what's wrong with me. My big three ended up being A. It ended up being BPD, which is borderline personality disorder, or it was like CPTSD, which is PTSD but like complex, I believe PTSD, or autism. And because I just wasn't thinking autism, like I was like, okay, it's in my the three of the things that I'm thinking about, but I wasn't really thinking about it until one day I was just like, fuck it, let me just look at it. You know what I'm saying? So I looked into it and it just clicked. Like it was literally like a click. Everything aligned. It just made sense. I was like, oh, okay, that's it. There it is. Very, very like, it's very like self. It's like you're staring at yourself type of thing. So for people that, in terms of autism, I say people should really should self-diagnose because even if you were to get a professional opinion, even if you were to go for a professional opinion, right? Because of the way that the system is very like they've only studied white males. A lot of these doctors acquit like equiv let me say this. They make it like you can't be autistic if you achieve things. Like there are autistic people in jobs, in the tech field. You know what I'm saying? There are autistic people doing things in life. And they assume that the only way that you can be autistic is if you didn't if you struggle extremely you struggle a lot with social situations, right? Once again, the diagnostic criteria is more so how much of a how different you are from other people, from other people's perspective, not how different you are from inside. Like for me, growing up, I had to like literally in my head coach myself on everything I was doing. So in the middle of a conversation, like if say if we were having a conversation right now in real life, right? I would be telling myself if I was masking, I'd be like, okay, so you have to say this, and then you have to talk about this, and then like you've been talking about this for a lot, so be quiet. And then give them time to speak, and then move your arm because you've been standing there for. So I would just sit there and like orchestrate all of the thoughts in my head. I'll be like, if this person says this, then say this. That can't possibly be normal because normal people when they're associating or having a conversation, it's never that hard to like. They don't have to train themselves through it; they just do it. You know what I'm saying? So I had to literally go. Okay, so now you have to bring up a topic. Do you have a topic in your head? Okay, bring up the topic and then talk about the topic for a little bit, but not too long because that person has to be able to talk about it. And then, so I would sit there doing this in my head. A lot of diagnostic criteria, I said it before, it has to do with how you are seen by other people and not what's going on inside of your head. And so if you were to like, if for me, if I was to go and have a professional opinion, to go out and seek a professional opinion, I would drop almost like $1,000 for a professional opinion, and then I would go And then because I could have a conversation with somebody, it would go, you're not autistic. So, in terms of like self-diagnosis, I feel like self-diagnosis is valid as hell in terms of like mental illness, just in general. That's something I'll say. It's valid to self-diagnose yourself because you're not hurting anybody. You're just trying to understand more about yourself and how you work. So that's my thing about that.
But even with that, you know, there's this effect, I've forgotten the name, but you know, sometimes when you Google symptoms of something, like if my stomach is paining and I Google, or like if someone has, the best example is always a pregnancy scare or malaria. When you Google some symptoms, they'll always click. You'll always be like, damn, these are the symptoms. These are the symptoms. So definitely I have that. So for a mental illness, like for example, depression, one of the things is sadness, one of the main. And for a lot of us, experience sadness and feel like we're depressed, but that really isn't the case. But I think that's a whole other topic we can get into. But even as we wind up, I think one question I have again is, do you think people treat you differently when you tell them you're autistic? And if so, and if not, do you prefer when people treat you differently, or do you want to be still treated the same when you say you have autism?
When I tell people I have autism, it's just kind of like, okay, cool, that's nice. But that's just because I have autistic people around me too. Like most of my friends, I can't make friends with a lot of neurotypical people because the ways that they communicate is very hard. It's very different from the way that I communicate. I'm very direct. I'll say exactly what I mean. I don't have time to do guesswork. So most of the people around me are autistic. So it's like it's just kind of like we're one and the same. You know what I'm saying? So we just kind of like associate like regular people. But I do have a few people in my life that are like, you know, that I've told that I have autism. And it's kind of like, okay, that's cool. And they just kind of like move forward. But I know that in the real world, like in the working world or something, if you tell people you have autism, they're going to treat you differently because they see autism like as that, like they see that boy autism, like the one like that they studied, you know, in terms of autism. They think that you're just, you know, all autistic people are the same, that you can't possibly be autistic if this and this and that. Like a lot of times when I tell people that I have autism, they'll be like, oh, well, you seem normal. And there's no way to seem autistic. It's just like how does your inner world function? Like how do you function from the inside? How does your brain make you function? Like it's not even like, you know, something that people can see unless, you know the sign or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So I mean, personally, I like the idea of being treated the same, but I also really like the idea of being treated differently. I really do. I really love it because you're being more conscious of the fact that I function differently, and I think that's cool. So yeah, I do enjoy people treating me differently, just not in a rude way, you know?
Yeah, I get that. I completely get that. The duality of both sides. And you are to tell us now, as even the last part in short, about you wanting to sue your parents. So first, are you serious about that? Like, do you actually want to sue them? And if so, for what reasons?
Neglect, child abuse, child sexual assault, child sexual abuse, abandonment. There's been times where they just left for like 2 weeks to other countries and just left us at home at like ages like 10, 12, and like 15, stuff like that. Like, so things like that, suing them. I'm definitely, I am. I'm excited. I'm leaving because I want to leave, gather my evidence. I have evidence. I already did. I took pictures. Every time they used to beat me, I would have bruises. I took pictures. I have recordings and voice memos of them literally saying things like, it's not my responsibility to feed you. Voice memos. I have evidence. I have so much evidence sitting in my Google Drive, just waiting for me to leave, go out, establish myself, get my apartment and everything ready. Because I already have like a lease signed and everything. I'm just waiting for the days to come. So I go out, I leave the house, I move out, and I get myself situated, and then I come back to sue. That's it. They're going to jail. I made it my promise to my little brothers. They're going to jail. My little brothers cannot go through this. They just can't continue. They can't. They can't continue.
So in the event
I'm
that
gonna
that
end it.
happens, will you take care of your brothers?
Yes, I probably will. I'll look at the options because I don't want to be in a situation where I have to be a parent again. But if I'm in a like with the way that my trajectory is going in terms of like social media and like my content creator, I could see myself raking in a serious amount of money for doing what I do. So if I do happen to rake in that much money, I would have no problem taking care of my siblings. No
Because
problem.
again, I'm not
But
sure
if
you'd want them to go to foster care and all of that.
that's a whole other can of worms that I just really would not want to open for them. And then it'll separate them. It definitely will. It'll separate them. I don't want that. So I'm definitely going to consider the idea of that, but it has to be, I have to be established first, monetarily, like financially. I mean, yeah, I am suing them.
So tell us your last comment on this whole forgiving abusive parents. What is your last take on that for the listeners?
Okay. Don't forgive your parents. Don't do it. I'm gonna say it right now.
That
Yeah, don't forgive them until they can sit there and apologize with tears in their eyes and sincerely change their behavior, which a lot of parents won't. Don't forgive them. Don't. You don't need them. Your family is who you choose. Blood doesn't mean anything. Blood means nothing. Your family is who you choose. Don't forgive your parents. That's all I have to say.
I remember someone saying, talking about the saying, the proverb that we're all taught in English is blood is thicker than water, but the actual saying says the blood of the covenant is thicker than the water of the womb, which for me was crazy because, as you said, family is the people we choose. For some of us, perhaps we wouldn't relate to that level of hurt, that depth of not liking your parents, because a lot of us tell you, ah, just forgive them. They didn't know they were doing this, but you don't know how much this thing hurts someone. For them to say that, you know, because ideally, in the perfect world, you expect parents are selfless. You'd expect your mother to be the most selfless person you've ever met, because that's the narrative that's always propagated. You expect your parents to be so selfless to give up everything for you, to sacrifice more things for you. But in a case where they don't and they actually make it even worse, I can only imagine. So for me, I wouldn't want to invalidate what someone else is going through, because a lot of times we invalidate because we feel, you know, we have grown up, we have to be mature, be the bigger person. So I'd like to hear the thoughts of our listeners. For them, what do they think about this whole topic? What have they learned about autism? What do they think about forgiving abusive parents and also healing your inner child? Because as she said, as you said, a lot of parents are emotionally immature. And that's probably a part of the reason that all this abuse and all these things continue being propagated. So I want to know, what are the thoughts of our listeners? They can follow us at The Good, The Bad, and The Busharian on Instagram, at The Busharian Pod on Twitter. Please feel free to leave a review and subscribe to on whatever platform you are listening in from to get weekly updates on the podcast episodes. Have a lovely week ahead, guys, and cheers.